obviously COVID didn't exist. All of a sudden it blows up. You're in Santa Monica. So now you go on these movie sets. And so you're testing Jennifer Aniston. You're testing Bradley Cooper. You're testing the grips, the camera crew. Within 8 hours, you're saying, we're good. Keep filming. Keep it rolling. So that's pretty cool.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they
are
hard.
I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super you.
Well, welcome to today's Super U Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Qualman. Most of you know me as Equal Man. We've got calling in today, Joe Bakhti. And Joe, I'm going to let you go over your kind of, I always say your comic book story. So like origin story. First of all, where are you calling in from? And then just walk us through how'd you get where you are today? And then what we'll do is I'll have you ask me any questions that might help what you're trying to do. And then I'll reverse the table and ask you any questions.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm calling in here from Brentwood in Los Angeles. We are based in Santa Monica, and yeah, I'm the CEO of and founder of Quantine, and we are a real-time medical intelligence company. So we basically deliver information that is vital and crucial to keep people alive and happy, both in chronic diseases and prevention, but also in more acute cases like COVID. And we specialize basically in merging all these new amazing medical technologies, biotechnologies with AI and software solutions, so you actually get what you need as a patient and you're protected.
Where can we find out more about the company?
Oh, at quantgene.com. So it's quantgene.com, like quantification of your genes, Quantgene.
Awesome. Now with COVID, you mentioned COVID. So is this mean business is booming, or like is the demand increased, or what does it look like for everyone out there?
Well, like our core expertise and competence is that we horizontally and vertically can integrate all kinds of things in across healthcare, including deep laboratory technologies. So we don't shy away from looking actually into the details to deliver the crucial information to patients. And in COVID, what we saw is, as you probably no, everyone has heard about that, is that one of the central problems in COVID is not the test itself. We have perfect, near perfect tests, detect everything, 99.99% accuracy, FDA, everything. But the turnaround times are a problem. So you do your COVID test and then 14 days later, you get your result with LabCorp and Quest and these guys, so you're up to 14 days wait time, which is stupid because it's about an acute pandemic. Like if you're infected, you can't wait 14 days and then infect everyone else. So we looked into the problem and saw it is literally a real-time medical intelligence problem. It's our core expertise. So the test itself takes 2 hours in the lab. So why does it take 14 days? Well, it's all the surrounding complexity. And the way you solve that is through a cloud system that you basically at the second where the result comes off the PCR machine, you get it on your phone. And that is what we built in a very quick time because it matched kind of our existing cloud infrastructure because we do this in genetics and some other places. And that basically cut down time by 95 to 98%.
No, that's awesome. No, that's really good. And then in terms of, do you have any questions for me? And then I'll turn the tables and ask you a bunch of questions as well.
Sure. Tell me more about, you know, how did you get started and had this idea for building this amazing podcast? What motivates you? What makes you, what keeps you excited about this? I mean, I find it very exciting, but.
Yeah, no, it came from our listeners. So a lot of our readers actually said, hey, you should do a podcast. And then we're fortunate to meet with people like you that are amazing. And then they go, hey, you have those conversations, let's broadcast them. And so the Super U podcast is just designed to help unlock and unleash the superpower within everyone. So obviously I'm going to turn around here, ask you a bunch of questions. And then that insightful information that you're going to give is really going to help the audience shine and take off and just explode.
I absolutely love that, by the way. This is my big mantra or my big belief. If you ask me if I'm religious in my own belief that exactly that everyone can be a pioneer and that we fail as a society too much in unlocking that potential. And everyone suffers from it, that we don't unlock more potential from individuals who don't realize their potential, but also, you know, companies like Quantine, we could basically hire unlimited numbers of people if they would have unlocked their potential and become real pioneers, right? And just go in and say, okay, what's the problem? Let me solve it. There's like literally no limit to how many people we could hire. We just have a problem finding these, you know, pioneering minds who just are no nonsense, common sense, go in. I think anyone could do that. It's more like a thing in your mind that you have to switch. So I think people can do it.
What do you think stops people from doing it? What have you seen? Well, first of all, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Germany.
Yeah. Das so stimmt.
Das stimmt, absolutely. And what holds them back? I think, here's the funny thing. I think we make it an, I mean, I think that has been said before by many people, but I think it's something where, look at kids, they have this natural inclination to solve problems, right? And they have the magic engineering cycle, as I call it, the reality engineering cycle of learning. So if you have any kind of, you start with a vision, right? You are in a certain situation, you think this is not good, something should change, or we could do it better. You envision how it could be better. And then all you need to do is learn about the situation, like how does this thing work? Imagine how could it work? And then build, like just try it. And then repeat, you know, relearn from what you built. Okay, this failed, why? Reimagine and rebuild. And as long as you do that and repeat and persist, these are the five things. You know, learn, imagine, build, repeat, and persist. Nothing is impossible. You can, you will cure cancer, you will solve nuclear fusion, you can do anything. The only problem is that we don't train people to take it from their, you know, when they are childs doing that very spontaneously into a systematic process and enable people to stick with it for 10 years or so. You cannot cure cancer in 1 year, but you can definitely do it in 10 years, but no one really sticks to the plan. And I think that framework is kind of missing, the framework of reality engineering that we now understand very well. But our schools, our universities, our companies, they don't support any of that. Right? They're actually fighting against it.
No, it's well said. I mean, I think you hit it on the head. We said 10 years. It's always about persistence in the short term, patience in the long term. And it's funny, I was sitting down with Mel Robbins and she gave me some advice that I use almost every day, which is great advice. It's just crazy advice. It's just listening to your conversation. Are you talking more about the past or more about the future? And so you want to live in the present and you can talk a little bit about the past, but you don't want to live in the past. You want to talk about the future, live in the present, talk about the future. And since you're at the forefront of the future itself, and since you're kind of one of the top thought leaders, when you think about what's happening medically in the pandemic, a lot of people want to romanticize about the past, and but you can't deal with that. You got to know this is a new reality. How do we move forward? In your mind, like, what are some of the things that not only help you get through the pandemic, but from a medical standpoint in that industry, like, what do you see happening? Obviously, plan for everything, predict nothing. It's hard to predict the future. But as you look into the future, all of our listeners are probably leaning in, listening more. What's your advice or what do you see kind of transpiring here over the next 12 months?
I think as a general rule, crises always catalyze innovation. Because innovation does things better and allows people to come up with new solutions. If you're in a very comfy situation as a society, you say, whatever, like there's a new thing, I don't need it. In a crisis, you need it. So everything that's good gets actually accelerated, in my opinion, in a pandemic, even though it's terrible for many people. But I think for society at large, it accelerates innovation. That is also true in medicine. Look at telemedicine. But look also at much deeper innovations like Quantine does. For us, it was actually very healthy, right, to as a company, because we could suddenly deploy all these amazing technologies that we developed in cancer to protect people. But in cancer, you have this shocking complacency because everyone got used to death and destruction, right? Yeah, whatever, 600,000 Americans die every year. It's just what it is. It's old age. It's like, it's not, it's cancer. This is not old age. Cancer is a terrible disease, completely unnecessary. You know, 80% of cancer deaths could be prevented as we speak today just through medical intelligence.
Wow, 80%.
Absolutely, yes.
Wow.
Through early detection and prevention.
Early detection, okay.
And the problems in cancer, there's a ton of complacency. People have gotten used to the problem. They've gotten used to not solving the problem. So if you come in and solve it, it's not easy to make this happen. Absolutely not easy. There are incumbent big pharma and startups and big startups, like overcapitalized startups, who stand in the way. It's like, no, no, you need to take 10 years for that, and so on. In COVID, that was a game changer. There was no incumbent, right? Everyone's like, oh my God, this is a pandemic. It's happening now. We talk to employers. We talk to Hollywood studios. They have to shut down their productions, and they have to solve the problem. Yep. You know, if you're a LabCorp or Quest and you fail, and you can't explain to everyone, well, it's just normal. It just takes 14 days. That's what they try to say. And if we come in, it's like, guess what? We can do it in 8 hours.
8 hours.
Exactly. We do it in 8 hours. We do high quality PCR COVID testing from collection to feedback at scale. And they can't argue with that. And the demand side is so strong that they say, you know, whatever, LabCorp, you know, you are, screw you. We are switching to Quantgene. They solve our problem. Otherwise, we have hundreds of millions of dollars in movie productions. You know, large partners we have are just on hold. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. How does it work? Does a person come in and they get swabbed at a center and then it's shipped to you and you guys turn around in 8 hours? Or how does that work?
No, you have to. And that's exactly why you need to have an agile, you know, warlike situation mindset. We solve your problem. We don't care how, we have to solve it. And we don't say, oh, you swap it or you send them there. They say, we can't. We are a movie set. We have directors, you know, and producers and movie stars on set. We can't send them somewhere and then wait. So we need to come to the movie set. We have to put up a tent. We have to put in nurses. We have to put in concierge who manage this whole thing with an intake, with a cloud-based system that you are already registered. You click on the name, they get swapped. We have a driver who drives it to the lab. And if we drop any part of that value chain, you have a day delay because someone screws up. So you need to control the entire value chain, fully vertically integrated, from signing the contract, setting up the tent, managing the nurses, having the concierge on site, having the iPads ready,
wow,
having the swabs ready, labeling the swabs the day before, going in and then bringing it to the lab, calling the lab, making sure they are following the software that we installed there, all to the end where the lab director has to click the button, okay, it's all signed off, and call him. And, you know, if he's fishing, just send someone to the river and get him back from fishing. Say, you have to click this button now. It's 6 o'clock. So it was a tremendous effort to set it all up. But I think this level of ownership is missing in healthcare. There's like this one central problem in healthcare. No one owns the problem.
Yeah. And you guys just, you just attacked it because you saw, obviously COVID didn't exist. All of a sudden it blows up. You're in Santa Monica. So now you go on these movie sets. And so you're testing Jennifer Aniston. You're testing Bradley Cooper. You're testing the grips, the camera crew. Within 8 hours, you're saying, we're good. Keep filming, keep it rolling. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, it's a big stress because, you know, you have 200 people you test and then one is missing for whatever reason. Someone didn't account for the tube. They have to hold the entire production.
Yeah.
Now, did one guy is missing, that's important.
Did you have to pivot your company? Like, you pivoted your company once the pandemic hit? Or how did that work? Walk us through that. Because everyone's trying to pivot, right? Everyone's trying to, like, the world's changed. How do we adjust?
I mean, we had to, we definitely had to pivot a little bit. But since we are a cloud-based real-time medical intelligence infrastructure, we were doing not the same thing in terms of time pressure, but the same thing in terms of vertical laboratory integration and full service in cancer, in mutational detection. So I would say we pivoted a little bit, or we like moved into a very adjacent field and pivoted the software and the cloud system a little bit. We definitely pivoted a lot on operations. That's like, you know, that's a whole new thing. But it's very healthy for our center, like strategic positioning. It totally feeds into our big promise. We protect and extend your life through that capability, and we take ownership and we deploy the latest in software and AI and laboratory tech to keep you safe. So COVID is a perfect match strategically. Operationally, there's definitely a bunch of things we had to add.
Did you have to take on more capital? Like, as an entrepreneur, did you have to take, because this other thing, there's probably a huge demand. Did you have to quickly hire more people, get more resources, or what did that look like?
I mean, the funny thing is COVID is like so close to the money, like you make so much money so quickly. The opposite is true. We are now in the process of skipping the next financing round because we don't need it anymore because of COVID. So,
oh, wow.
So the PPP loan was actually super important because that was when it hit initially, that was a problem. And then the PPP loan helped us. So that was a good government intervention. But now it looks like we can definitely relax much more on the fundraising side. And that's also a good thing, because if you do really disruptive new things like Quanchine and rethink a crucial industry like medicine, you lose a lot of investors like there because they don't get it. They literally say, can't you just do what everyone else does? And then you wonder, like, dude, you're a VC. Like, you know what that means? Venture capital. You're not a bank. But yeah. Everyone in venture capital, like literally everyone I met so far, has a little bit of a bank perspective. They say, like, can you just do something that's super safe and that's proven and repeated? It's like, guys.
Yeah.
Someone should do real venture capital. It's very easy to make 100 or 1,000x returns here. You just have to use your brain a little bit and do stuff that hasn't been done before.
Right.
To be new.
It's not reward, it's risk reward. And it's interesting because it sounds like you're seeing that during this time, it's human nature. People get defensive. All of a sudden, yeah. There's uncertainty. Whereas, like you said, it's venture, like adventure. This is the time. I remember hearing Jack Welch many years ago during the recession saying, this is the time to attack. These
yes.
moments only happen occasionally, and this is the time to really get aggressive, and it goes against your DNA. So I love that you're saying that.
And it's a little bit like, it's funny because I was always fascinated by finance. I do some stock investing myself and also some trading. Tesla, one of my favorite stocks.
Oh, you're lucky, man. That's awesome. My favorite stock too if I own a bunch of that.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to give you a quick update. The Focus Project, my brand new book, is out. It's available. So go to Amazon, type in The Focus Project. It was set to launch in October. We moved it forward because so many of you DM'd me, texted me, tweeted me, emailed me saying, hey, I have a friend. I have a family member. They're really struggling during quarantine. They're having a tough time with all the things they can't control. They're letting fear set in. They can't focus on the most important things in life. So that's why we've moved the book forward. The Focus Project. Don't make me regret it. The publishers think I'm crazy because you always launch books in October, not in the summer. But I said, hey, look, this is a whole new time. This is something we've never dealt with. We need to get this in the people's hands so that it can help them. So again, check it out, The Focus Project. And thanks again for all your support.
I mean, 2017, 18, I told everyone Tesla is the most undervalued stock in the world right now. Everyone was laughing at me. They're not laughing anymore. I made also enough money to, you know, that was very good. And
for those that don't follow the stock market, Tesla just this year around March, I think it dipped down to 450 or something, maybe even 300. 350, and now it's over $2,000. And if he bought many, many moons ago, then that was even lower. But just to show how quickly it's moved during the pandemic.
Yeah, and it's... And I think the funny thing is in financial terms, you know, talking about your core obsession, that's a very healthy obsession to unlock this potential in people. I think we have these instincts to think in analogies, to be herd animals. And in finance is the most extreme case where you see, like, why are you doing this again and again? Everyone is afraid you're selling. Everyone is greedy you're buying. You're always losing money. You have to be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy. Warren Buffett. In venture capital, it's the same thing, especially when things happen and everyone gets scared. Then you get the best deals and then you have the most disruptive companies. So you have to absolutely double down. And people just don't get it. It's like always amazing to me. So at some point, I'm becoming a hobby venture capitalist.
Yeah.
It's just too easy and too obvious.
It's amazing to me too, because obviously you have a German background, and correct me where I'm wrong. I mean, I worked at Travelzoo, which is founded by two German entrepreneurs. So they were kind of not the norm, right? In Germany, it might still be to this day. It might not. Let me know if it's changed where it's a little more conservative than someone that was from Silicon Valley, where like fail fast, fail forward, fail better. In Germany, you know, if you fail, sometimes they don't look at that as like a badge of honor like they might in Silicon Valley. Is that still true? And if so, how did you kind of go against that?
I mean, I have this amazing, like I have this experience. That's why I moved to the US. But that's also why we now have an R&D unit in Berlin. So Germany, when you compare to the US, it's fascinating because these two economies have literally a completely complementing or opposite strength and weaknesses profile. Like the US does certain things so badly that it's shocking for me as a German, like efficiency, order, getting shit done. It's just a disaster. Like it's like literally like a third world country. But then it does, like it's completely ridiculous. Like
the airports, the airports are a good example. Like
exactly.
A German airport versus an American airport.
But also companies, even Google and these things, it's such a chaos and like madness. It was like, how do you even survive? But then other things, they are so much superior. Like for example, financing, even though I think they're still dumb a little bit, but compared to other people, the capital markets work perfectly. Marketing, perfect. Like nailing product market, this flexibility and matching demand and, you know, product market fit. America is just by far the only country that is mastering that. Whereas Germany is the opposite. They are perfectly organized. They get everything planned. They have super reliable workforces, super intellectual and smart. And with Germany, I always say like they do everything better except for three things. And unfortunately, these three things you could argue are the most important things. Finance is like a total joke in Germany. They just absolutely don't get it. It's a joke. Like, I can't even. Management, also a joke. They always promote the worst people into management and the best people are like the employees. And finally, as everyone knows, politics, as history shows. They just have a complete blind spot for, oh yeah, politicians, like the lowest level job. It's like below a garbage man in Germany. If you're a politician, no one even talks. It's like, ew. Like banking, politics, and management's like, people don't want to touch it. It's like very bad jobs.
And I love what you're doing is that you're combining the best, like the strengths and the weaknesses to make it whole. Because, I mean, Berlin's one of my favorite places in the world. And obviously, I haven't traveled since March. But, man, I can't wait to get back there. But I love that you've got a location in Berlin, but also you've got the location in California. So you're marrying the both of both worlds, which is great, which is a good segue. What's the best advice you've been given so that we can share that with the audience? Obviously, you're super successful. What's the best advice you've been given?
So first of all, people who give me advice are normally, I'm not very appreciative of advice given to me because who the hell, like, you know, in most cases, it's very useless. So the best advice I've ever found was not through people giving it to me, but me finding very smart people on YouTube, for example, and listening to them. So I think that's how you should collect your advice. Like just try to find people you really think are smart or you can admire. I mean, one of my favorites, obviously, as everyone else's, is Elon Musk. And, you know, when he talks about first principles, the way he thinks about the world is exactly how I think about it. And often this kind of reiterates and reminds me on my own knowledge about it that I sometimes forget. And so it was Elon Musk, Paul Graham, founder of Y Combinator, very smart people, Reid Hoffman. So he's one of the smartest guys in Silicon Valley, I think. So I like these people. I like, you know, it's why not go to the best if you look for advice? Just, you know, look at the people who really nailed something that you also can connect to, like emotionally. Yeah.
No, that's great. And obviously our listeners, they can check out the Elon Musk podcast where he gives us 7 super tips. So he's a great one. Those tips are amazing.
Like Elon is one of these guys, you know, most people, even the smartest ones, I have a lot of disagreements with. Like when you look at super successful, super smart, like Bill Gates, he often says things where I was like, I'm not so sure about that. With Elon, there was not a single instance, and I know everything about him. Like he never said anything that I thought was wrong, which is amazing. He's like, Elon, you nailed it again. And so he's a little superhuman. Yeah. Something is going on there.
I love what you mentioned too. Plus he's got your stock. So obviously that's also the tie there. This world's beautiful because you can go online, as you mentioned. You obviously have mentors physically, but also you can get mentors from afar, especially in these digital virtual times that we have. So that's huge advice for all our listeners here. And I wish we could talk forever. We'll have to get you back on because this has been very insightful. We'll have to get you back on quickly just to check back in, especially as the world's moving. You're helping be a thought leader to solve the instance. 14 days to 8 hours. I mean, come on, that's great. So that we can make sure that we're living the best life that we can. Before I wrap things up, I always like to ask, what's the one question I didn't ask you that you wish I would have asked you or that I should have asked you?
That's a good question. You asked the good ones. You asked me how I view the next 12 months. You could have asked me how I see the next 10 years. That's the only missing question. But
yeah, with the next 10 years, what do you go? Just real quick, 30 seconds, lightning round.
Well, we have a simple mantra for us as a medical intelligence company: a decade within a decade. So the objective is to extend the healthy human lifespan by 10 years within the next 10 years.
I love
and
it.
We do this through a lot of things, mainly through new intelligence and much deeper insight, new diagnostics, but in the end, delivering to you the information that you need to know, okay, how do I prevent and detect anything that might kill me in the future?
I love it. That's good. It's super helpful advice. We're going to get you back on if your time allows, because you're going to be super busy. The company's going crazy. If you want to check it out, QuantGen. How else can people find out about you? Where can they find you?
On my Twitter, Joe Bhakti, J-O-B-H-A-K-D-I. The company, you can always shoot me an email, right? So jb@quantgen.com. If you have any comments, I always love to interact with people. You know, have any kind of questions or smart ideas, always happy to.
I love it. Well, Bisbolt, awesome talking with you. And thank you so much for changing the world for better, going from 14 hours to 8 hours in terms of the turnaround, just making people feel safe. And as you said, if we were more proactive, we can reduce cancer by up to 80%. So go get those tests. You know what tests they are. If not, go check out the cancer research associations to figure out what tests around what age to be as proactive as possible. So that's awesome. And thanks again, Joe. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. And bis bald.
Bis bald. Ciao. Tschüss.
Tschüss.
Thank you for listening to today's Super U podcast. This is Equal Man reminding all of us, until next time, it's not what we take from the world. It is what we leave behind.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Super, 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 super,
super you.